Good morning. How are you, Zach?
I'm very well. It's nice to meet you and nice to get the chance to talk to you. And just to make this clear before we start, to get this out of the way, you are not related to Ira Glass from This American Life on NPR, right?
That's my wife. Wait a second. What's this book about?
I don't know. You wrote it.
I'm not, but I'm a fan.
Well, I don't know what it is about that particular name, but I think I've asked that of several people with the last name there. But you're a very, very famous comedian who's been around on the circuit for quite some time now, over 30 years in the business, right?
Yeah, I started in high school at a place called the Comedy Works and on an open mic night. I would go there on the weekends and I would see acts like Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, Gary Shandling, Gilbert Gottfried, and like Stephen Wright and Tim Allen, Roseanne Barr, Eddie Murphy. So, and then at the end of every night on the professional shows, they would go, "Hey, if you think you're funny, come on down Wednesday night. It's our open mic night." And that's where it all started.
And this book that you wrote is to chronicle your life basically from the start to all the way through your comedy career and having to hide one very specific secret, which I can relate to because I'm gay as well, but you eventually had to come to grips with coming out. How did that all happen?
You know, I had sort of wanted to, I never even thought about it, and even my friends couldn't believe it because they were like, in a two-year period, I aggressively started talking about it. And I don't know, maybe it just all caught up with me. And like I say, I was happy before. I had my circle of friends that knew. And I also had a lot of people that knew that I knew didn't care. Like, they knew, but it wasn't allowed to be talked about it. You know, that's worse in a way than someone not knowing. There became a group of people that they knew because friends told them, and they knew, but they couldn't talk about it. And that gets even creepier. And I get it. If someone's in that place, I respect it. I don't mean creepy, like, in a way where I would judge anybody. But it became like, I know you know, and you know I know you know, and I know, and it's like, but I'm too comfortable to go, hey, you know what you know? I know you know, and now we can talk about it. That's a category you get into. So I was just like, I don't want to leave this planet and not think. That's too big of a thing to hide. And, you know, so I just decided, all right, it's time. And I told a friend of mine, you gotta ride me on this. You gotta get me. Don't let me, you know, forget about doing this a week from now.
And it took a heart attack and also some inspiration from the It Gets Better project for you to finally realize that this has got to happen for not only you, but for the inspiration, hopefully, of others, right?
Yeah, you hope it will, but you know, you just, because you know what other people have done for you, I would start going around the It's Get Better campaign and, you know, looking at the videos, and it's very, you know, it's very heartwarming, but it also can make you sort of, you know, get very emotional. And I just remember thinking, all right, if I keep hiding, it gives validity that it's something worth hiding. So I decided, you know, all right, it's time. You know, a lot of kids have been killing themselves in the news at that time. It still happens, but it was just making the news a lot. And I remember thinking, okay, you got to just do this. And, you know, of course, I'm glad I did.
Absolutely. And give us a little sense, since a lot of people, listeners, may not have an idea of the sense of weight that gets lifted off of somebody when they come out so publicly.
You know, you think you know that expression. Like, and by the way, you know, there's other things people hide, too, I learned from writing this book. You know, this is just my thing that I hid. Other people hide. There's people hiding things all the time. And I thought I knew the expression, a weight off your shoulders. And I would be able to analytically explain that. Oh, weight off your shoulders. That means you have something on your head, you get rid of it, and then it's a weight. It's a you know, not really a weight, but it's lifted off of you. Okay, but guess what? Once you do it, I remember literally, and I'm not being dramatic, a week later maybe, going, oh my God, it's over. You know, it's over. Now, look, in my situation, it was really over because remember what I said, in my community, no one cared. It was just me uncomfortable to talk about it.
Right.
So it's like, if you ever got a massage and it feels good right away, but sometimes 20 minutes into the massage, it makes you, without even anyone telling you to take a deep breath, it just 20 minutes in, you settle and you're like, oh, that's what I felt like. Like, oh man, I don't have to, you know, keep that lie anymore.
So now that you're, you know, in the out community, can you help out a few other people like Tom Cruise, Will Smith, John Travolta, anyone else on the list?
You know what? I don't really, I think it's good. encourage people, but I get it for whatever people's reason are. Look, I just hope everyone's happy, and if somebody's, you know, decided to stay in, I certainly can't wait till my age to do it and then be judgmental of other people. It just would come off really bad. When I hear people do it, it's good because I think it helps, but I get it, you know. Sort of everybody comes out at the same time. Everybody on the planet comes out at the same time, and that's when they're ready. But some people, maybe they're never ready, I guess.
I'd absolutely agree with that. Now, at the time of your heart attack, you were in a pretty committed relationship with your boyfriend for about 14 years. And how did you manage that kind of ongoing panic attack, as you said, about pretty much every moment where you have to actively figure out how I'm going to continue this life forward, forward, forward? And it took the heart attack to make that all come to a head.
You know what happens? You get comfortable in the lie. And I've said this a lot. A lot of people, when you circle yourself with open-minded people and your circle of friends don't care anymore, that's admirable and that's good. But you have to remember, that's not the world. And that's not the world I grew up in. So a lot of the things that I hold on to are from things that happened 20 years ago. So I got comfortable hiding it. And at one point, it gets like, you know, even you realize it's pathetic, because I'm not stupid. But I remember, you know, having a heart attack and being in the ambulance, and Sarah Silverman was outside the ambulance, and I yelled to her, Sarah, call Andrea, because she was a really close friend of mine, and Andrea was, you know, she knew it was code for call Chris. And I remember thinking, well, I'm having a heart attack. I swear to you, I remember this going, oh, my God, this is so pathetic. Why do I care? And that's, you know what, that's what really woke me up. But then I went back to my regular life. But that was a big wake-up call. I lived, even though it took me about 2 years after I had the heart attack, I lived with that moment. You know, I didn't always think about it. I would go back to my regular life. But I had moments of thinking about that. I'm having a heart attack, and here I am still worried about hiding who I am. And it was like pathetic.
And you've been on Last Comic Standing. You found new life with podcasting now, which is such a huge deal, as for a lot of comedians like Mark Maron, who wrote the preface to the book here. And I'm sure you're having a great time now that things are out in the open and you're enjoying the world of internet radio, as it seems, right?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. And, you know, my act's not about my being, you know, gay, which is also another... It's a very hard term to say, but I have to get over it, you know, because it's like it's been taken over by the negative of lame, and then you have to say you're lame, basically, in your head. For the people out there, and I will preach, that don't understand, there's a lot of people that go, I would never go up to a person and say, hey, you're gay or you're a fag, ever. Oh, my God, I don't care. I just use it as an adjective, like that's... You know, hearing lame, it's lame. You're basically hearing your whole life that your being is lame. And now I have to say, and I get it. It has a double meaning, and I'm not saying I'm the one meaning, I'm the other. But it still sucks to have to go, you know, you hear a radio host go, okay, Ty Glass is on the line gay. He came out as gay, and then I'm gay. I'm like, oh, Jesus. It's the one part of it. What it makes me feel like inside to be open and to be able to be out with my comedian friends and reference the truth about my life, that feels awesome. But having to use that term, I got to be honest, it sucks. I hate it. But I don't hate who I am. I just hate the term.
You're comfortable. That's what you are. Now you're there.
I'm very comfortable, but I wish we could... I understand now why groups of people like to clean the slate and get a new word. A lot of people don't, because they have no reference point. I realized from writing the book, that's why when people want to change who... You know, when we say we're not going to call it retarded, we're going to call it mentally challenged, or we're not going to call it maid, we're going to call it housekeeper. A lot of people go, oh, whoa, oh, my God, because they don't have a reference point to being something that's synonymous with just a dirty term that's been, you know, sort of muddied up.
What a fantastic point. Todd Glass, we've got to let you go. We're running out of time, but thanks for your time, sir. Very much appreciate it. The new book, ready to go now, called The Todd Glass Situation. Thank you, sir.
Zach,